There are so many opportunities right now in sports cards. So many opportunities. And it's only appropriate that we talk golf cards with Mike Lacusta, the golf card collector. He's golf underscore card underscore collector on IG. I am Paul Hickey with nooffseason.com. Welcome to an episode of the Golf Card Strategy Show. My co-host, Mike Lacusta, how you doing today, my man?
Very good. What's up, Paul?
Oh, you know, there's just so much going on in the sports card world, Mike. It's like, I feel like there's so much action. I don't know if it's just me right now, but just selling on eBay, buying on eBay, looking forward to going to card shows, creating content, talking to
I've noticed a lot of action, a lot of interest again. I've heard like literally within the last week, a little bit of doom and gloom on other podcasts and shows. Okay. Maybe clickbait titles, like, is the sports card market crashing again? And little things like that. But I mean, from what I'm seeing, everything is doing really well. Obviously, golf cards is my main passion. And because of Full Swing, because of the Masters that just finished, there's been a ton of hype around golf cards. So I haven't seen the doom and gloom. But Paul, I'm going to ask you, like, have you been following much golf at all since we started the Golf Card Strategy Show? And how does that compare to past years?
It's been more golf than I've followed in past years. It's been hard to keep up with everything from a sports standpoint, but I have enjoyed since Full Swing and since starting the show with you, I have enjoyed following golf more so than ever. I'm more familiar with the names. I'm more familiar with the personalities, the strengths and weaknesses of different golfers. And that's super fun for me. So I'm loving it. Hopefully the audience is as well. Speaking of the audience, just real quick, Mike, we've got Oh My Shoes in the house, loyal audience member. Good to see Shoes as always. And then of course the sports card doctor, Chad Gill, over a million cards in his collection. Wow. And he's on our sports card strategy show coming up on Monday. So stay tuned for what he's got. But Mike, we're going to do losses. We're going to do wins. We're going to do buys, sells, and the watch list, which is kind of a Mike Lacusta special that I love. Might have to incorporate the watch list in all of our other shows. So yeah, man, no doom and gloom for me. I don't like those headlines at all, because you've probably heard me say this before, but I don't believe that there is a sports card market that would crash necessarily, but there are so many different micro markets, and there are players, like the players and the golfers have their own individual markets. I think it's the reason I say that is because when you look, you can look at a market index. For example, Market Movers has like a SCI 50 or whatever they call it, Sports Card Investor 50 in Market Movers. Great. But it's like the top 50 cards. And the top 50 cards have gone down over the last like 24 months, like consistently gone down. But then you have like baseball prospects. When you look at Bowman Chrome first autos of the top 2021 and 2022 prospects, they're all up. You know, when you look at a lot of the golf cards, they're like a lot of them are up. And so you look at basketball, you know, a lot of basketball cards, De'Aaron Fox. I mean, a lot of it is just micro markets within the overall sports card market. So I just don't love the doom and gloom, but I understand.
Well, talking about the other sports you just mentioned, I mean, NBA playoffs right now, it's very encouraging to see those card prices having spikes, ups and downs because of players' performances. And that's something maybe we haven't been seeing a lot of last year and the year before, as things were just kind of downward trend all the time. There seems to be a lot more response to player on court action. And then you mentioned prospects. I mean, a year from now, when some of those prospects fizzle out, are we going to be seeing clickbait titles saying, you know, the market is crashing? Well, sure. If a guy doesn't pan out, the prospect's gonna die out.
You could look at Anthony Volpe, and we won't get into baseball too much, but we talked about him on the Sports Card Strategy Show. The baseball prospecting market basically goes like this. A guy gets called up. He's young. He doesn't perform very well. His card prices drop. But then you've got the next 30 first round draft picks whose cards just released, and then and their market is on fire, and then their market explodes when they get called up. So it's like it's cyclical, and so it's easy to find, you know, 100 cards where they're 50% down, but it's just as easy to find 100 cards that are 50% up. And all right, so let's get into the golf. Golf Card Strategy Show episode 6, Paul Hickey, Mike Lacusta. Losses. You want to jump into some L's of...
Yeah, I'll actually start off with something I didn't add to the list, but I did a couple PSA submissions recently, and I guess sort of a win. One of them processed a lot faster than I expected. I sent these two submissions, one with 20 cards, one with 60 cards, in the same package. So when PSA received them, both of them, you know, were checked off on the first couple of steps, the exact same dates. The 20 card submission processed quicker than I expected. The 60 card submission has been stuck in assembly. So it's finished grading, but like weeks are going by and they're supposedly printing labels and encapsulating the cards. And I'm like, why is this taking so long? So that's kind of a first loss of the week.
I can't pretend to know the answer on that, but I've had it happen to me as well. And I've been very curious as to why that step has taken so long, but, I wouldn't worry too much. I'm sure it'll pop into the shipping.
Yeah, and one
pop into the shipping soon.
Well, it was just annoying because I sent these two packages literally together. The one thing I'll point out for listeners is one of them was a special. So PSA does either monthly or TCG specials or you know, faster service level specials for less money, things like that. So the one that's taking a long time is a special. And my hypothesis is because it's a special, maybe they don't prioritize it because I paid less per card or whatever. But hey, let's get into some golf cards losses. The two cards that I want to start out with were ones that we shared in last episode during the Masters. It was a Justin Thomas and Rory McIlroy rookie autograph card. So let's start with the Justin Thomas. Last episode, I predicted that the card would sell for $500 US. It was the Justin Thomas Upper Deck Artifacts rookie patch auto, numbered out of 10. And this card finished at auction for, I think, $300. So 60% of what I predicted, $302. So one thing I'll point out about Justin Thomas's performance is he was playing pretty well in the first round, second round, and because of weather delays, they paused partway through the second round on Friday and they had to resume on Saturday morning. And Justin, he had a 99% chance of making the cut. Like, he was several shots clear of the cut line. He was sitting top 30, top 40. He rattled off like four or five bogeys in his like last seven or eight holes. And he missed the cut by one stroke. So come Sunday on the Masters, when this auction ended, Justin was nowhere in sight. He had missed the cut. People weren't really paying attention to him. Funny enough, that's actually the same thing that happened to the Rory McIlroy card we're going to look at in a little bit here. But I guess, you know, it's interesting, like, maybe pay attention to big tournaments and players that don't perform well that, you know, I think Justin Thomas is going to play wonderfully for the rest of the season. So maybe it would have been an opportunity to snatch up this card. What do you think?
Yeah, snipe some auctions on some guys that missed the cut. That's a great idea. That's a great idea. So big names that missed the cut. Golf Card Strategy, Mike Lacusta coming in and saying, hey, big name misses the cut in a significant tournament, perhaps. Go snipe an auction that the person had planned to end on the Sunday, mm-hmm. or, you know, or the Monday morning or whatever. That's a great strategy. Good call there.
Everybody's going to be looking for John Rahm Sports Illustrated for Kids cards.
Yeah, that's right.
And overlooking the JTRPA. Yep. One thing I'll point out on a personal level, you remember I bought the Bryson DeChambeau version of this card, numbered out of 10 RPA, BGS 8.5. If I were to kind of draw some parallels, I think right now Bryson DeChambeau is like a third of the stock of Justin Thomas because he switched over to LIV. He only has one major. JT has two. He's not really in people's vocabulary often these days. Bryson also missed the cut at the Masters. So if JT's selling for 300, I think maybe my Bryson card's only worth $100. And if you recall, I paid 155. So that's a personal, I guess, loss of the week, just based on some inference.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. So I guess my L of the week for golf cards would be that I still haven't bought any golf cards yet. And I will though. I just don't think it's necessarily the time to buy unless you go in and do like a snipe, like you just pointed out a minute ago. I think a lot of people thought maybe it was an L for Tiger that he got injured. I mean, that definitely does suck. Although it seems like seeing him, and if I'm segueing too quickly into the W of the week here, Mike, stop me, but
you are. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, well, I'll hold that. It seems like seeing Tiger though, might not have necessarily been an L. So I'll get to that at the end of your W, but continue on with more L's here.
Yeah. I got a few more L's.
Go for it.
Not a good thing, but actually do have a Tiger for the wins, but anyways, let's switch over to the Rory one. I did send you the link for that one as well. It was a Rory McIlroy Exquisite Black, which is a subset within Exquisite.
Nice card.
Beautiful card. Last episode, I said it was numbered out of 10, but actually it's numbered out of 25, I believe. Yeah. And maybe in the listing, I saw the number 10, and that was referring to the auto grade. So yeah. That's what happens when you scan listings too quickly. I predicted this card would sell for $1,500, similar to JT. It sold for 2/3 of my prediction. It could be that my calibration's a little off. Like maybe I'm overestimating how expensive golf cards are these days. And I've been watching cards like this one and the JT RPA for a long time and watching them ebb and flow. But 100%, I think this was a good deal. I think whoever got this for less than a grand, I mean, Rory McIlroy, I think he's got 5 majors. He is this generation's talent. Like I dare you to find a golfer under the age of 35 who you could stack up against Rory's pedigree. What do you think about this card?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Whoever got this card got an amazing deal, and it wasn't for any lack of interest either. I mean, 46 bids. I would say that this is not an indicator of any market. I would say it's probably an indicator of Rory's performance at the Masters, correct? I mean, because this is April 9th. I mean, $969, 46 bids. It just seems like a good deal to me. Really good deal. Beautiful card.
Exact same scenario as Justin Thomas. It ended on the Sunday, final day of the Masters, and Rory missed the cut. And on top of that, Rory had a lot of pressure on him because the Masters is the last remaining major he needs to complete the Grand Slam. So every time he shows up, he's going to have a lot of pressure and a lot of expectations. And between him, Jon Rahm, and Scottie Scheffler, they've been kind of juggling back and forth with top seed in the world, number one on the world ranking list. And it almost seems like Rory's been kind of being edged out, and it's kind of a battle right now between Jon Rahm and Scotty because they've been winning a lot of tournaments recently. Rory's been playing great golf, but he hasn't really been winning. So, you know, that could be a factor as well. Attention's being drawn to these other two, even though Rory's in the mix. People have been talking about those three guys as being battling for number one. But yeah. I think maybe there's a storyline that he's being edged out.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, quick question on this auction strategy wise, when you're bidding, do you think that this could have been someone putting a high bid in earlier on? And then winning it because they're, you know, it didn't get bid up like it would have had Rory been in contention on Sunday? Or do you think someone's actually out there super smart sniping auctions since Rory's not playing?
So great question. I mean, it just depends on who won it. I mean,
yeah.
I think
if you ever do the high bid thing,
I think of three different auction strategies. I'm nervous to say what I do because it's okay. A little bit of like a no-no, but I have a snipe app that I use. Okay. So that way I don't have to be paying too much attention to them. I know where I want to be. I throw it into the app and then I just see what I win. But the other two paths you can go down to win this kind of card are you put in a high bid and you just see if you win it, which is what you just said, or you pay close attention to the auctions. You know, while you're sitting on the couch watching the Masters, you scroll on your phone and you look for good deals and you snipe it last minute. So heck, it could have been any of that, just depending on who won it. You could look at the bid history. I don't know if we need to get into that level of detail right now, but you could take a look at the timing of when the bids were occurring.
Yeah, that's true. I think I might do that in another exercise. And maybe it's Chad Gill says he snipes, always snipes. And Chad and I write the members only articles at nooffseason.com. Chad, I think this seems like a good members only article to dig into, like Mike's saying, in terms of digging into the bid history on stuff like this. Very interesting. So, yep. And thanks for the shout out shoes in the comments here. For those of you listening on Apple and Spotify, go to YouTube, drop a like on youtube.com/Paul Hickey. Let's join the channel here and let's help Mike out too. Go to IG golf underscore card underscore collector. Follow Mike for his amazing collection. All right, Mike, back to you for more L's. What else you got?
Well, I got one buy and one sell, which I'm going to put into the L's category. Okay. So
all right. Very good.
The sell is my Phil Mickelson rookie autograph. I believe they're numbered out of 799. Okay. There's also a gold parallel numbered out of 100, and possibly, I forget if it's right or not, but a platinum version out of 25, which you never see. That's hoarded by collectors. But anyways, I had the base out of 799, and I bought this for $500 last summer, and it's been just on a steady decline ever since. And I've been on a bit of a spending spree, so I had to sell it off. I got $425 for it. I'm speaking U.S. dollars, even though I'm Canadian. Just so our listeners can speak the same language. And so $75 loss. I decided to take the loss because Phil came second in that Masters we were just talking about. And as a LIV player who's not really watched that often by the general population, and also as an older guy who really isn't expected to be playing well, to come tied second at the Masters, I thought he's got some hype around him. You probably saw this. I posted it on a couple of different Facebook groups. And on one of the posts, I got a lot of positive feedback about trying to sell the card, but one guy was like, if you're trying to sell this for, I asked 500, which is the same price I paid for it. He said, if you're going to get 500 for it, I've got five of them and I'll sell them for 300 each or something like that. I'm like, all right, man, feel free to poach my post and sell your cards. I don't care. But yeah. Somebody paid me $425. And I mean, at the bottom, I saw the card selling for $280, $300. So like the guy is kind of quoting legitimate data points, but that was a few months ago, like before Full Swing. That was when he was totally canceled socially and, you know, golf cards hadn't gone back on the way up. So I thought, you know, it is a loss, but hey, I'm going to cut my losses at the right time.
Yeah. I like that you mentioned that because I was thinking while Phil was at, you know, at or near the top of the leaderboard throughout the tournament, really. I was thinking, man, this is a great sort of quiet redemption story. And if you own Phil cards, I think you got to sell now. So it sounds like you did that. And I agree, like in sports card investing and flipping, I think you have to take a slight loss overall because it might be a macro loss, but it's definitely a micro win considering where his cards were. And I think you took the macro loss, but the micro win. And when you get that money back, you got money back in your pocket to play with your bankroll and fund your PC and things like that. So I think that was a smart move.
Yeah. And, you know, on the topic of micro wins and micro losses, this is a nice transition into the wins. And I'll start with another one that's like a micro loss, micro win. The loss aspect of this story is that I was buying a type of insert card out of Goodwin Champions. It's called the Cosmic Parallel, numbered out of 99. They have these beautiful precious metal gem style of artwork and a very like simplistic player image on the card. I absolutely love them. They're numbered out of 99. And I was paying like the Tigers were selling over $100. I paid like $70 for a Colin Morikawa. I was paying like $15, $20, $30 for Matthew Wolff, Bryson DeChambeau, some of these other guys that I collect. These cards are not selling anywhere near that. The Tigers held his line, but like he's not selling what it was originally. You can pick up Bryson and Matthew Wolff for like $2 now, and I was spending $20, $30. So that's my loss. The win aspect of the story is that because it's a set that I love so much, I have no problem having a stack of 40 or 50 of these cards on my desk in my PC. So I've been buying them up at cheaper prices, reducing my cost average. At the end of the day, you know, average, maybe I spend $6 a card now instead of 20 or 30, and I get as many of them as I want. So you know, if I hadn't bought one for $20 or $30, then I would have one less of that card, and that would make me slightly less happy. So
Yes.
that's the win aspect.
I love that. I love that. And that's not talked about enough in the hobby and in specifically the flipping and investing part of the hobby. And I think you're absolutely right. I know that like stock market investors talk about that kind of concept where if you believe enough in a stock, even if the price has gone down, if you still believe in the stock, what you do is you put more into it to lower your cost average, like you just said. But that doesn't necessarily make you as happy as having a card does. So I love that you made that point. That's very, very cool. Just real quick in the comments section, Chad Gill saying the only way you win by putting a bid in ahead of time is if you pay way too much for the card or if it's undesirable. Also, Evan Bell is in the house. Good to see Evan Bell. Evan, we're gonna get to your question. We'll have some time for audience questions at the end of the show here. So, Evan, thanks for contributing, and we'll get to your question. So, my quick win that I noticed just in the data is that Tiger coming back, people seeing Tiger, getting hype about him, his overall market is up quite a bit. I mean, it was in the last 365 days is where it's down, but as you get into 180 days, 90 days, 60 days, 30 days, 14, 7 days, his card market's up. And I think that's a big win for golf cards. And then when you look at like a lot of his more liquid cards, most of them are up in value quite a bit. And I won't get into like, I'm not gonna like dig into that or talk about it or anything, but marketmoversapp.com. If you want your first month there for only $1, you can use the promo code no off season. And that's where I'm pulling a lot of that. So I think that's a win. I think that's a win. Like Tiger's market being up, him coming back to play, even though he got injured, I think it's big for not only golf cards, but also for sports cards. Mike, what do you think about that?
You're totally right. I sold some Tiger Woods rookie cards for a lot more in the last 2 months than I had bought them for 6 months ago. And it's because I think the golf card market is on the way up, and Tiger Woods is kind of the poster boy for golf. I am worried about it one day when Tiger retires or slows down, and he's a very private kind of guy. So I don't know how in the public he will be. And that I don't think will be a good thing for golf or golf cards. But right now, he is still playing in some Masters, or sorry, in some majors, recently the Masters, and people are interested in him. In fact, I'll jump into my first win, which isn't my win, but it's, as you said, a win for the market. Tiger, I think I shared a link. Maybe you can pull it up on the screen. It is a, I think it's, so it's an Upper Deck Artifacts. I believe the subset is called Legends, and it's a Tiger Woods autograph. Sticker auto. It's kind of like a gold parallel. It looks like a
Since
beautiful card.
2021.
That's the one. Yeah. So
Yep.
this card was selling. I remember this card in, I want to say, early 2022 time frame for less than $1,000. It was, I saw guys picking them up for as low as 750, 800, up to like 9, 950, and for this
Dang.
card sell for 2100, first of all, it's an excellent play for, you know, that could have happened. And this is a nice example where you don't have to do quick flips, especially with proven legends, Hall of Famers, stars. You can buy and do what I call a swing flip. So it's kind of a longer term. Instead of waiting a month or two to sell your card or waiting for the player to perform well, you just have an expectation that the tide's going to rise. You buy it, you wait a year or two, and you sell it. Yeah,
Yeah, I
go
want to
ahead.
say quick props to Paul Fisher. He's a guy who's a early supporter of the Sports Card Strategy Show and nooffseason.com. Lefty and I talked a lot about Paul. He's been on the show before, and he was big on buy Tiger, invest in Tiger. And this was back in it was in 2022, basically, throughout 2022, saying buy Tiger. With more of what you just said in mind, where it's not necessarily like a 4 to 6 month quick flip, but it's more of a couple year, a year or two. He's gonna come back around. He's gonna, like let's see what happens. It's Tiger Woods. It's the GOAT. So Paul Fisher, if you're out there, great work. It's happening. So be patient, everybody. If you've got goats from golf or other sports, they do come back around. So good call.
Now, the one thing I'll say about this particular sale is this card doesn't sell regularly. I mean, it might sell once every couple of months. And you never know if you only have one data point, if it's legitimate. You don't know if it was shill bidded up.
Yes.
And shill bidding isn't necessarily that the sale didn't go through. There may have been somebody who put a $2,500 top bid thinking, I want to win this card no matter what. And it got shill bid up to $2,100. And that winner still paid. He just overpaid because he wasn't bidding against anyone. So you never really know. And I hear on Facebook groups, and I hear on these Facebook groups of people talking about, they see evidence of shill bidding, and so they post about it to, you know, highlight the issue. And I haven't seen anything fishy in this particular sale, but to go from $850, $900 up to $21, that's just, it's insane. So it's either a really positive sign, or maybe it was shilled, or maybe it's both. Maybe it's a positive sign. It would have sold for a lot more than 800, but you know, maybe it still got its way up somehow.
Yeah. To me, as long as somebody pays for it, it's still a legitimate sale, even if other bidders out there didn't have the intention of paying. If somebody pays for it, I mean, it's worth that money. I mean, it also doesn't mean that the next sale of this card is going to be anywhere near it, maybe, you know, either north or south of it, right? It could be totally different. So it is, I'm glad that you're qualifying that basically by saying like, hey, look, this card doesn't sell very often, not a whole lot of sample size of data, kind of be careful with it, right? But it is a good sign. And then according to Chad Gill, he's just adding here, according to Market Movers, 9 out of the top 10 volume golf cards sold in the last 14 days are Tiger cards. Only card not Tiger is the 81 Donruss Nicklaus from episode 1.
Crazy. Wow. We're
talking about that one.
One more win I want to mention before we move on. So, I was following this auction. It was on my watch list. It was not one of the ones I mentioned in a past episode because I really wanted to win it. And, there was zero bids, up, and it was like ending in 24 hours. And I had been watching it for a week. And it ended at a bad time. It ended like in the morning on a Tuesday. So, I had my snipe all set, ready to go. And then in the middle of the night, the seller took it down. And so I was like, what? This had a card I actually really wanted. In fact, it was a John Daly gold 1 of 1 with a beautiful patch. It's a card you and I talked about before. So I reached out to the seller through one of his other auctions, contact seller, and said, hey, I referred to this listing. I said, why did you take this down? I was following it. I was going to throw out a bid. You know, I really wanted to buy some of these cards. It was a lot. So it wasn't just that John Daly. It was like 20 cards, and which was perfect because it's a card I really wanted and I can get a bulk deal and sell the rest of them if I don't want them or whatever. So I contacted him on one of his other auctions and sent, you know, very polite, very kind of just saying like, one of the cards is one I really wanted. And the guy responded with a very kind of understanding. He's, you know, I didn't see anybody bidding. And I thought maybe I'd break up the lot because I got a lot of inquiries about the one John Daly 1 of 1 card. And I thought maybe I'd sell that separately and blah, blah, blah. So I said, you know, man, I totally understand. It's a bummer because I thought I was going to get a good deal. But, you know, if you're willing to sell it, you mind, you know, let's negotiate, let's chat. And, you know, let me know if you've got any other offers. And so he told me he had a couple low balls. And I said, you know what, to be fair, like, tell me kind of what the ranges are, because I don't want to low ball you. If that's something you're going to take offense to, I want to find a deal here that both of us will be happy with in the end. And the guy was like very happy with the way I was talking to him. I was being respectful. I wasn't trying, you know, I didn't send, what's your lowest?
What's the deal?
What's your lowest price? Yeah. Like I wasn't being aggressive about him ending the auction. Cause I was pissed, but I wasn't. People can do whatever they want if it has zero bids.
Yeah.
And then not only that, but I was being very fair and polite and respectful in how I was trying to negotiate. I wasn't trying to shake him down. I wasn't trying to pretend like and to be fair, the guy, the way he was talking, he didn't know a lot about sports cards. And I said, you know, I kind of looked into some of your auctions and I noticed that you've got like a dozen cards that have like you pur- that were purchased within the last month. So I said, what exactly are you up to? Like, no, I'm not trying to imply anything, but it's just very strange for you to be like buying cards and then selling them a month later in a lot with other cards. Like, just curious, just want to be curious. And he said, you know what, to be honest, I just went on a spending spree. I bought too many cards and I'm kind of enjoying the process about learning how to sell on eBay. I kind of wanted to test the waters around the Masters, which is why I'm doing this lot of golf cards. And I thought, you know, I'd sell them all at once and just put them in a bundle and whatever. And just kind of sounded like somebody, he didn't know exactly what he was doing. Like, he was kind of trying to learn the hobby. And yeah. I said, you know what, man, like, I'm interested in this one card. Let me know if you get any other offers. Tell me what offers you currently have. I'll beat it. So I ended up, we came to a good deal and he was happy. I was happy. And one negotiation tactic I had was like, there was about a $20 difference in the end after we went back and forth several times. And I said, you know what, I'll come up to your price, but do you mind throwing in one of those other cards from the lot that I liked? And then that way, you know, I'm spending an extra $20, but I get at least one more card I liked. You get the amount of money you wanted. Everybody's happy. And he was happy with that. So, we like without, you know, we weren't, you know, brown nosing with each other, but it was literally the most positive experience I've ever had going back and forth with negotiation. And then, the guy said, you know, I'm probably, you know, I've got some other lots I was going to post. Here's some pictures. He sent me like six pictures of cards, mostly basketball and stuff. And he's like, if you see anything you want, let me know. We can work out a deal before I post these on auction. And there was some pretty sick cards. One of them was too expensive. It was a Kobe LeBron dual patch, exquisite or something like that. But one of them was kind of within my price range. It was an Allen Iverson LeBron dual patch card, BGS 95 Gem Mint. And so I looked up the history on it, and it had sold, the only sale other than his, which it was a weird sale. It was $499 auction and best offer accepted. But on all the different websites where you look up how much something actually sold for on best offer, I couldn't find the dollar value on 130point.com, on maven.io, on different websites. I couldn't find the amount that he paid for the card. So then I said, you know, look, this card sold for $61 3 years ago. And I'm like, I have no idea what it's worth today. What are your thoughts? Like, what would you sell this for me today? And he's like, how about $80? And I'm like, you know what, man, you were so great to deal with. You sold this John Daly to me fairly fine. Let's do it. So then I'm using Ship My Cards. And for those who don't know, for international buyers, shipping is really expensive. So I have to use a service called Ship My Cards, which is like a PO box in the United States, so that sellers can do domestic shipping for $5 tracked or whatever. Otherwise, it would cost them like $15 or $20 to ship it to me in Canada. So the two packages that I ordered, which was just one AI LeBron card and then one John Daly, one of one plus the other card I bought from him, showed up. And he had thrown in all of the other cards from the auction.
No way.
So I got like three Nick Faldo autograph cards, a bunch of random like awesome base cards, like stuff that's worth, you know, some of them worth 50 cents a buck, but some of them were easily worth 15, 20 bucks each. And this guy, at one point he said, this might seem a little bit spoiled the way that I'm like going about this, having bought a bunch of cards and now I'm just flipping them and selling them for a loss. And the fact that I don't seem bent out of shape about it. He's like, I know a lot of people would think I'm some rich guy who is just what I, and I'm like, you know what, man, I'm not, I have
no judgment,
man. Like, I'm getting a good deal, so I'm happy. Why would I judge you? So it seemed like maybe he had a little bit of like self-esteem issues because of the whole situation, like, oh, I'm losing money. But the self-esteem came from the fact that he didn't really even care that he was losing money. So at the end of the day, I'm actually happy with that because I don't feel like I took advantage of him if he's not upset about taking a loss on this stuff. Yeah. And I'm also pumped that because we had such a positive conversation, like probably 50 chats, you know, back and forth, just, and I was answering questions too. He didn't know about grading. He didn't know about pop one, things like that. So I was kind of educating him in our chat, and you know, he just appreciated it and he gave me a bunch of free stuff. So that's kind of my final win of the week.
That's a great win, Mike. And I think that there are more and more people getting into the sports card hobby that are exactly like the profile of this gentleman that you're talking about. And I mean, I can say like 2.5-3 years ago, like I was pretty much fitting the same profile as he does, where I in a way, not all of the things that you're talking about. I obviously like have some more inherent knowledge and more knowledgeable on a lot of the details, but where I do feel like I can relate to the gentleman that you worked with on this is that I approached getting in initially as like I do everything else in life and professionally, whereas like I learn by doing. I don't really read a whole lot. I don't really like, you know, I don't really consume a whole lot of content. I learn my crafts by actually performing them. And like anything else, like when you first start doing something, you suck at it. Like everybody pretty much always sucks the first time they try something, all the way up until, you know, everybody knows the saying, it takes 10,000 hours, blah, blah, blah. Like, I think it's the same thing at flipping sports cards. Like you have to go through your losses. And I like that this guy knew that and he wasn't upset about it and he was learning in the process. And I love that you were schooling him a little bit, like in a nice way. And I think at first I was kind of like, okay, Mike just basically pulled a virtual card show where like you were super nice. You guys figured out a deal like you would at a card show. You did it online. That's awesome. But then as you kept telling the story, I was like, oh man, like this guy is learning by doing, which I think a lot of us in the hobby that are new to the hobby should be doing. But what was also interesting is like, I was met with a lot of skepticism when I first came in as well on Reddit, especially on Facebook groups, where people were annoyed with me that I was kind of playing around. Like to them, I was playing around. To me, I was learning by doing, but I love that you work something out with him and, it was definitely a win, I think, for both of you. Even though he lost money, it was still a win for him. He's gonna make money and be happy the same way that you kind of have with your cosmic inserts, right?
So yeah, no, exactly. And part of it too was I just enjoyed the conversation. I love talking about sports cards, especially golf cards. Yeah. And you know, we talked about like he asked me, "What do you think? What kind of cards do you think are going to do well in the future?" So then I told him, "You know, there's not any golf sets on the horizon yet. So, you know, I know you play basketball.
The audience wants to help this guy out, Mike.
This is my private friend.
Mike's hoarding him, Shoes. Sorry, buddy.
You know, Shoes, look up John Daly, one of one that was sold recently. And that's the guy that,
there you go,
that I bought it from.
Shoes. Reverse engineer it, baby. That's right.
Hey, you know what? I had something I was going to say, but why don't we just keep moving on? Let's move on. Unless you had another win you wanted to say, let's get into buys.
Let's do it. I want to hear who we should buy and who you're buying.
So funny enough, Tiger Woods, even though he's higher than he was a year ago, I'm looking for deals. I'm looking for what I consider a good buy. So I'm not necessarily buying the most liquid card on a buy it now or on an auction by a reputable seller that ends at a reasonable time. Like I'm not playing it that way. I'm looking for all of the typical tactics you try to do to get deals. Like I just said, a bulk lot, card shows, auctions that end at funny hours, eBay sellers that don't have a lot of feedback, so they might not have a lot of buyers attracted to them. The two cards that I bought recently that are Tiger Woods cards, I did share the links with you in the show notes. So if you don't mind, pull the first one up. Both of them were from Probstein. So the first one is one I was watching. It's a 2002 Nike promo, which has Tiger Woods' iconic rookie card image on it, except it's sort of this red card instead of a traditional green golf card. And it's also this kind of like tall boy kind of card. So it's not like a normal 2.5 by 4, 2.5 by 3 or whatever a normal sports card is. So a lot of people don't like cards that are big or just kind of out of the ordinary because it doesn't fit into your collection, doesn't fit on your box. For me, though, I absolutely love the image because it's the normal, you know, iconic Tiger rookie image. BGS 9 isn't necessarily what people are looking for, but that's another thing I'm looking for. I'm okay with getting a card that's not gem mint, especially if it's something that will fit into my PC if I want to keep it. if I bring it to a card show and somebody's willing to pay me, what did I pay? I paid $15 plus shipping. If somebody wants to give me $30 at a card show, I'll sell it. You know what I mean? Because how, like, some people might say, oh, Mike, you're trying to sell above comps. It's like, yeah, but how many BGS nines of a random card like this do you think there are? Like, it's the value is in the beholder. So if they don't want to pay me more than I paid, then I'll keep it because I like the card.
Yeah, well done on this one. I like
so super cool card. And if you don't mind, pull up the second card, Tiger, that I bought. So same seller, Probstein. So the reason I was watching this is I bought the first one and then I went to Probstein's store and I searched for Tiger Woods. This card popped up and I said, great, I'm going to bid on this auction too, because if I win it, then I can combine shipping. So I save on shipping. So in my eyes, I think I had a high bid of like $18 or $20 or something like that. And I thought, if I win this, then I'm saving $5 of shipping compared to anybody else who's bidding on this. So at the end of the day, it's as if I won it for $10 plus shipping. So that's another strategy I use. I mean, a lot of people are already aware of this, but look for multiple cards from the same seller that end close to each other, as long as that seller mentions in their listing description that they're willing to combine shipping.
Phenomenal, phenomenal tips. And yeah, I mean, even if you're not into golf cards, like this show with Mike LaCosta, you get a lot of tips on buying and selling cards in general that apply to all sports. So Shoes, thanks for the love in the comments. He says, if it wasn't for this show and listening to you guys for 8 months straight, I would be nowhere. I'd still be looking at absolute. I love that. All right, Mike, what else you got, man?
So that's it for buys. I mean, I did buy other stuff, but those are the only two I'll show off. Let's get into sells. Cool. You already mentioned you didn't have any purchases, so I have not
purchased any golf cards yet. Stay tuned for that.
So I don't have any links for you to pick up, and I forgot to send you a picture, but during the Masters weekend, I took a picture of like 20 or 30 cards that I was willing to sell, threw it up on all my socials, Instagram, Facebook groups, whatever. And I actually spent probably like 45 minutes pricing out each card, because so many people out there in the community can get all bent out of shape if you don't have an individual price for each card. So I put in the work and grinded out some sales. Not exactly what I have time to do these days, because of the baby on the way, because of work is busy. So it's kind of something that I said, I'm going to be sitting and watching the Masters. I don't have a lot of downtime these days. So if I do have downtime to sit and watch TV, I can be doing something while I'm doing it. And so I sold like, what did I sell? A Patrick Cantlay rookie autograph card. I paid, I think, 50-ish bucks US. I sold it for 100 Canadian, so about 70 US. So I made 20 bucks on that card. Justin Rose, I bought for 20 US plus shipping. I think I sold it for close to 40, 37 to 40-ish US. And that was a PSA 9 rookie auto. Sahith Theegala. He's actually a rookie who's got a lot of attention. I paid $10 Canadian for his rookie card. Probably another, actually similar to the story with the Tigers. I bought that plus his Cosmic out of 99 card that we were talking about. I bought those together, so the combined shipping for $5. So I'd say I got $12.50 into it. I sold it for $35. So that's a pretty good flip, almost tripled my money. And then I had some of these buyers were Canadians. And so the two rookies that have the Canadian rookies that have golf cards are Nick Taylor and Adam Hadwin. We've talked about them in past shows. And I had some of their rookie autos, a couple rookie patch autos. And I had those in like a separate picture. So I had like all of my main stars and rookies and then like one of just the Canadians. And in my posts, I had them both of those pictures in there just so that the Canadians could recognize where to attract their eyes. So some of these sales, like the Cantlay, for example, the guy's like, what would you take for all of your Nick Taylor cards? So I gave him a deal. So I sold those at a loss. But if I bought them for $40 and I sold them for $30 or whatever, at the end of the day, I get to cash out of them and I get to ship them along with another card that somebody bought. So I don't have to worry about extra packaging, extra shipping. And it's just, I get to keep the Nick Taylor cards I really want that I never sent pictures out online of. And I get to clear out the ones that you know, one day I thought I was going to hold on to my PC, and now I realized my PC is getting too big. What can I clear out?
Yeah. To me, that's qualifies as, you know, it's not, I know we're in the sell segment of the show, but to me, it qualifies as a win, because you know, that stuff's going to happen a lot as you're transacting, where maybe you thought a guy was going to ascend a certain way and he hasn't. So you sell at maybe like a 15, 20% loss or something like that, but you got to keep the card and you had the enjoyment of buying the card, and you enjoyed the card while you had it, and then you still sell it. And you really, there's not many things in life that you can do that with.
You're absolutely right.
Buy a bag of chips and eat 75% of it, and then sell it for 75% of what you bought it for.
Exactly. And using Adam Hadwin and Nick Taylor as an example, when the cards first came out, their top cards were selling for a decent penny, like $80, $100, sometimes more. At that time, I could only afford, based on my budget, some of the lower tier cards. Then 6 months later, a year later, I can afford those more expensive cards because they've dropped in price. And now I can spend $30 on a card that used to sell for $100. And so I buy it, thinking I get a deal, and it's the card that I ultimately wanted. Now it's time to clear out the tier two cards that I kept during that year.
Yes.
Because I'm a collector. I want an Adam Hadwin and a Nick Taylor card on my desk. I'm a little bit weird that way. I'm not necessarily in this as an investor. In some ways I flip, but I've told you before, I flip to build my collection. So, so during that year, I got to have an Adam Hadwin card. Then I buy his highest end card because it's dropped in value. I sell the one I spent $15 on for $9, and I make a loss, but there's continuity in my Adam Hadwin collection.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's a win because the price of the other Adam Hadwin card came down that you really wanted, and you got to buy that.
And I didn't have to buy it for $100. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So very good stuff. So, all right. I think it's time for maybe my favorite segment of the show, mm-hmm. which is the watch list. Are we ready mm-hmm. to move to the watch list?
Before we do, very quickly, I was telling you about my Hale Irwin 1/1 auto. Oh, I'm so bummed. I never accepted that eBay offer. So I threw it up on Facebook. The only one who showed any interest sent me one of those grungy, what's your bottom price comments. Yes. And I decided to take the high road and not take offense. I just said, hey man, you know, this is the price I asked. Do you have an offer? And he said, no, I don't really have an offer. Like, let me know if you can come down some. Again, I didn't take offense to it. I tried to keep a conversation going. And because of that, it turns out the guy opened up with me a little bit. He used to caddy for Hale Irwin. They even won the PNC championship, like the parent and child championship. He won that as a caddy for Hale Irwin. And so it was just super cool to connect with somebody like that. I didn't end up selling it to him. I would have loved to. He kind of like the conversation fizzled out. I said, hey, I would take this much. And he just never answered. So I was like, whatever. At least I got to meet somebody who caddied for Hale Irwin.
Yeah, that's very cool.
So let's move on to the watch list.
Sounds good. Who are we watching?
First, I sent you the link. So if you just pull it up, let's talk about it. I think the first one you're going to show is a Patrick Cantlie rookie auto card. Not the one that I sold, but actually I think it's maybe even nicer one than the one I sold. I can't really read the screen. So can you just tell the, like, what it's numbered out of, what the price
Patrick
is,
Cantlie,
when it's ending?
2013 SP Authentic rookie limited auto swatch, serial number 200. It's got a beautiful on-card auto on it. It's sold, or no, I'm sorry. It still has a day left. So you can go watch this. You can place a bid. Mike likes it. $61 is the current bid US. There's 9 bids on it. Ends Saturday at 8 p.m.
This card, if I were to guess, is going to sell for $125. Take into consideration that usually my guess is like 30% high of what things are actually selling for these days. So I would say if you're looking to get into a golf cart and it's your first purchase, throw a bid onto this for $95 and see if you can win it. This is a nicer card than the rookie auto that I sold for $80 US or whatever it is. I sold $100 Canadian. So whatever that is in US, 70, 80. Plus that was a private sale, so I didn't have to worry about eBay fees and all that. So, if I had sold it on eBay, I would have hoped to sell it for another 10 or 15% higher. And yeah, this has a nicer swatch, beautiful, stunning, contrasting autograph. Numbered out of 100. Mine was only out of 135. And Patrick Cantlay's one of these guys who I heard somebody say recently, Patrick Cantlay, like he's kind of a, what's the right word? I think they said he's like a dark horse. And I'm like, are you kidding me? This like 2 years ago, he won the FedEx Cup. He's one of the, he's like the top four golfer in the world. I think he's literally the fourth ranked. He's right behind Jon Rahm, Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy. Patrick Cantlay is like number four. Like how can
Hey,
you
in
consider
that
this guy a
context,
dark
this is
horse?
a heck of a card to go after then. For sure.
You want to
Very.
move on to the next one or share any
Yeah.
thoughts about that? Next one, actually, all three of the next cards are going to be Tiger Woods. So this is one I was thinking about throwing out a bid. I think it's currently at $15 if I'm
It
right.
is.
So this is a card. It's like, how much would you, Paul, spend on any random Tiger Woods Gem Mint graded card? Like
I
what?
mean, that's a great question. And for those of you listening, this is a 2007 Upper Deck Gaudi Tiger Woods Sports Royalty. It's a BGS 9.5 Gem Mint. The subgrades are all 9.5s except for a 9 centering. So good question. I would say like I just throw out like 100 to 150 bucks as like the random like sort of standard for like a Tiger Woods Gem Mint like 2007 card, and I could be way off. Maybe that's high. I'm not sure. But with one day left, seven bids, it's only at $15.50. So, are we
So
looking
you,
at a deal here, do you think?
I think so. So, well, looking at the Tiger Woods that I bought, that was a gem mint. That was a 2003, when we showed on the screen earlier. And I paid $15.50 plus shipping for it,
Yeah.
plus combined shipping. So I got a deal on the shipping. But so in that case, I would even say, ignoring the fact it's Tiger Woods, any athlete, what's the minimum amount you would spend on a gem mint card? In my eyes, it's whatever the current grading cost is.
Grading fee, yeah.
So if the grading fee is $15 from PSA, currently I think it's 19, and you have to have the
If they're
collectors.
20, yep. And the
Yeah.
collector's
So
membership, yeah.
I'm a collector's member, so my minimum that I could get a card graded for is $19, and I'm not guaranteed a gem mint. The lowest you can spend at BGS right now is like $25 or something ridiculous. And if I spend $25 sending in a Tiger Woods, I'm hoping it gets a 9.5 gem mint like this.
Absolutely.
So in my eyes, I look at a card like this, especially as a collector. As an investor, I think it's a move too. I don't know if you could sell this card for a profit, but I think it's a good deal. So if I were to put a price on this, I would say buy this card for $20, $21, because somebody else is going to try and buy it for 20. And I think that's a good buy.
I like it. I
And the
like
other
that.
thing I love about this card is it's a Gaudi. So this is the same image on that vintage Bobby Jones card that we talked about, the
Sure.
1933 Sports Kings. It's the exact same card. And so if you collect, and I actually was trying to work out a deal with John Morton, one of our listeners, who's kind of he's literally one of the most knowledgeable vintage golf collectors in the world. And he's kind of clearing out some of his lower graded vintage cards, et cetera. And he was trying to sell me this card as the Bobby Jones, and it's a couple hundred bucks, so I couldn't afford it per se with my priorities. But when I finally pick one of those up, don't I want the matching Tiger Woods card? Yeah, I do.
Yeah, good point. I mean, I think for anybody who has an eBay store that wants to improve the marketability, the eyeballs, the ratings, like just anybody who wants to improve their eBay store, and I think everybody out there does, everybody listening, grabbing these types of cards at $20, like to move them again at 20 to 30 bucks or 15 to 30 bucks is like you're looking at like customer acquisition basically. And so I think that whether this is a hold for you as a PC, whether you're able to move it for a profit, or whether you just basically pick it up so that you can have something to move on your eBay store without taking a huge loss, because it is Tiger Woods, because it is a gem mint card, has some notable features to it, as you pointed out. You are acquiring customers in a way, because they could save you as a seller. You could drop something in the mail with the card to kind of make the connection with them. So I really, really think that these purchases of Gem Mint cards that are equal to the grading fee, is not necessarily a play to get direct profit, but I do think it's a play and I like it a lot.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Paul, I know we only got like 5 minutes left. I've got two more cards on the watch list. Do you want to hit on them or do you want to jump into community chat?
Why don't you hit on them real quick, and then I want to take Evan's question, and then take other stuff you want to talk about from the community chat if we have time.
Cool. Let's hit on the Tiger Red PMG. So, we talked about precious metal gems before. This one is so there's two types. There's retro, and then there's just the base PMGs from the 2021. Upper Deck Metal Universe Champions. This is not the retro. This is the regular PMG. This card sold for like $600 US within the last week. What I found interesting is because it's red, it commands a higher value because there's like a orange kind of version of it, or it's yellowy orange, which sold for like $200 or $300 within that range. So like a third to a half of the price of the red one. With the same numbering. I think they're numbered out of 150. So I don't necessarily think it's a good buy to spend two to three times money on this Tiger card just because it's red versus yellow or orange. From an investment point of view. From a collector's point of view, I say yes, do it because it's red and it's Tiger.
It's red, yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense. All right, let's go to the 96 SI for kids just because we're short on time.
So this one's a PSA 6. This is his original rookie card. One day we're going to do another summary on all of Tiger Woods' rookie cards because there's like six or seven different main ones. In my opinion, this is the first printed. So, it's the main rookie card. What's the bid at right now?
The bid is at $102.50. Eight bids, five days left.
If you could get this card for $500, I would say do it.
Nice. Love it. All right, cool, Mike. Let's go over to Evan's question real quick. And then if we have any more time, we can hit on some stuff that you want to talk about from the community chat. So Evan, earlier in the show, asked a question about Ricky Fowler. How do you feel about Ricky Fowler? His last seven out of his last eight starts, he's finished in the top 20, I believe, and is now finally moving up the rankings after a massive slump he's had the last few years.
I love Ricky. And the problem with Ricky from an investment point of view is that even though for 3 years or 4 years, I don't even remember how long it's been, he's totally fallen out. His game has not been on par. He missed out on qualifying for the Masters. He's a ton of things have not been going his way. But as Evan mentioned, he has had some good signs, some good showings, some top finishes, some shares of the lead halfway through tournaments, things like that. So very positive signs. The reason I say it's tricky from an investment point of view is that he's so popular even throughout his drought. Anybody who was big into golf 10 years ago and first started watching Ricky Fowler come out with his flat brimmed skater hat and his bright orange and blue matching outfits, being told he's not allowed to wear his hat backwards when he walks onto a high end golf course, all that stuff made him an extremely likable guy. He's somebody who, would be hanging out in the parking lot of your high school, shooting the shit with, and to see him kind of making splashes the way he did in the beginning of his career, he won over a lot of fans. And even throughout the drought, when he wasn't qualifying for big tournaments, he wasn't playing well, I feel like people still liked him. And he doesn't have a lot of cards. He's got a Sports Illustrated for Kids that does pretty well. But the thing about him is that if you could pick up like a PSA 9 or PSA 10 of his Sports Illustrated for Kids rookie card, if you could get that for a good deal, I would say, look for it. I think last year, I don't know how his prices have done since then, but I think I could have picked up a PSA 9 of his Sports Illustrated for Kids. And we all know how hard it is to get a PSA 9 for like, it was less than $100. It was like something like $60 or $70. So if you compare that to John Rahm, Scottie Scheffler, Victor Hovland, all these other new rookies who Sports Illustrated for Kids sell for crazy amounts, maybe Ricky is a better buy because Scottie Scheffler or Victor Hovland, if they don't pan out, I don't think they're going to carry the same value in the future like Ricky's.
Yeah, that's a good point. He is kind of a household name. despite his struggles, which is really cool. All right, Chad asks real quick, Tom Kim seems to be an up-and-comer. Does he have any cards yet?
He does not, as far as I'm aware. I'm really hopeful that he's one of these guys who comes out in a future Upper Deck release. I'll ask my Upper Deck contact. I don't think he'll tell me, but I'll ask. Tom Kim made his first splash at the President's Cup and was, as pretty much the youngest guy on the team, carried the international team and got a lot of respect out of it. And then shortly after, like a week or two after he did that, he won a tournament. I think it was literally actually the following weekend. He won his first PGA event. So I'm sorry, I forgot who asked that question, but whoever asked that question, I totally agree with you. You're on point. I think Tom is a great rookie. And as a non-American, I love when foreigners, us international foreigners, do well. So I think that he will have people that collect him too once his cards come.
Nice. Surprise, surprise there. Chad Gill is on point. the audience probably agrees with me and my sarcasm there. I'm being facetious. Chad is always on point. Sports Illustrated for Kids, Mike, I subscribed a couple months ago. So every 2 months I get a magazine, and I have not received any golf cards yet, but as soon as I do, I will be texting you probably right away.
I love that. Send me pictures of any of the golfers. And by the way, Paul, I actually have listened to some of your other content, so I'm not just a contributor. I heard you and Kendall talking about both signing up. Was it Kendall?
Yeah, Kendall and I were talking about it. I tried to I got myself a subscription and I've received one magazine. So has Kendall. And then I tried to go back onto their website and subscribe like all of my other family members and my dog. And it basically like sort of like gates you based on, I don't know if it's cookies. I don't know if it's, I didn't try that hard.
That's funny.
I could probably try like, I tried it in an incognito tab and it still gated me. I don't know if it was because like my credit card or my address or my whatever. I tried different email addresses and it was limiting me to one subscription, but I was trying to get five just so that like the next big golfer or like, it was basically because of Bronny James, but you
that's
know,
awesome. So that's a benefit of being an international person is I have a Ship My Cards account. So I could sign up using Ship My Cards address. I could sign up using my home address. Okay. I could sign up using my ComC account. I could sign up using the PSA Vault account. Where else do we have vaults?
Suppose I could try to do. I have a collector's vault and I have a PWCC vault. I suppose I could try to do those. Chad said, my wife asked me why we got six of them. And how'd you get six of them, Chad? Don't tell me they're the digital edition, brother. That's an inside joke from one of the other Sports Card Strategy Show episodes where Chad was recommending that everybody go get the digital edition to get the Victor Wembanyama.
Is it an NFT in the digital edition?
No, it's not. I wish. But anyway, good stuff today, Mike. Is there anything else you want to add for the Golf Card Strategy Show episode 6?
Final thoughts. Because contrary to one of the other pieces of advice I said in my buys section, I was listening to the Sports Card Dad YouTube channel. Yep. I think his name's Dustin, and he had a guest called Sean from Reserved Investments, and he was asked the question from an investing point of view. So this is why I say it's contrary, because my advice is always from a collector's point of view. But he was asked from an investment point of view, which kinds of cards should I be looking at right now? And he said, in general, his advice through the years will always be look for true rarity. Actually, I think I wrote it down. He said absolute rarity.
Okay.
As opposed to condition-based rarity. When it comes to the most iconic, the 1% of cards, like the Sports Illustrated for Kids, Tiger Woods rookie, condition-based rarity can carry huge weight. So like if you had a PSA 9 or PSA 10 of that card, this advice doesn't matter. I'm talking about the 99% of stuff that you could put your money into. Rather than buying a Justin Thomas PSA 10 and overpaying just because it has a high condition-based rarity, be looking for that Justin Thomas rookie that's numbered out of 25. Because in the future, when 24 other copies of that card are hoarded away by collectors like me or wherever else they land, and somebody else wants that card, they are going to pay out the mouth to get that card, and the value could really carry forward. Whereas if it's a PSA 10, sure, you might only have a pop 25, but multiple could pop out of the woodworks if somebody overpays for one of the PSA 10s, if you know they realize how much it's worth. So condition-based rarity is not necessarily the best.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that's something that I don't always follow that I think I need to hear from smart people. So I'm glad that you said it and you're quoting Sean. That's good stuff. I think like I struggle with liquidity on that. And I think that's because for me, I'm not patient enough. Mm. I think that if you have any level of patience beyond mine, that makes a lot. I mean, it makes sense for me too, but it's harder for me to execute that strategy, even though I know it's smart. I like knowing that I could move a card with no difficulty, and the out of 25, just there's not going to be as many comps. It's going to take a little bit more effort, but it's probably worth it because you're probably going to profit from it, or at least it's going to get a higher gross number, making it worth it. So that's good stuff.
That's a good point. And in fact, the context that Sean was talking about was in time frames of a matter of like a couple months from beginning where I've made the decision to try and sell this card to actually completing a transaction. And if you're not patient, that 2 months could feel like agony because you need the money for whatever reason. So
yeah,
you're right.
Yeah. But that's good stuff. Thanks everybody so much for watching and listening. Chad says Paul doesn't keep a card long enough for rarity to matter. That's very true. But I'm glad that we're being fully transparent on that, because I'm not saying follow what I do with my patience level. If you do have patience, that is definitely the strategy to follow. If you don't, then you might want to consider PSA 10s or just more like something with more sales volume. But then but then the problem with that is like you don't really necessarily have the upside. You'd have to do something else to make a profit. Like if you're looking for a quick flip, you're looking at something else to have to happen. More like a betting aspect to it, player performance. Or you're looking at like buying something that you think is going to gem and then having it graded. And then, or, you know, something else is going to have to happen other than your patience, if you're impatient, which makes it a little bit of a catch 22.
It does. Well, let me tell you, the hobby wouldn't exist without collectors, and collectors want the shiniest, rarest thing.
That's true.
And I'll tell you, as a collector, I would prefer to have an extremely rare card in a low grade than an extremely common card in the highest grade.
Makes sense.
So, yeah. Anyway,
makes sense. I mean, the proof is in the data. Like look at, you know, go look at Anthony Edwards PSA 10s right now. They've been trading at like $82 for like the last 8 months. So there's really nothing there. I mean, mm-hmm. you're not really gonna make any money. You're not going to lose any money. It's just kind of, that's what it is. So if you want, I mean, it's great that it's not losing money. Somebody wants it, right? To your point, you need the collectors, but you know, you're right. There has to be, we need the collectors. We need to flip to fund your PC, as you say, and as Chad Gill says. So great show today, Mike. Really appreciate you.
Thanks, Paul.
Looking forward to continuing to create content with you. I'll let you get back to everything else you've got going on. Thanks everybody in the audience for watching and listening. I'm Paul Hickey with nooffseason.com. He's Mike Lacusta. Check him out on Instagram and you know, Other Facebook, golf cards and memorabilia Facebook group. There's plenty of places to find Mike, golf_card_collector on Instagram. Everybody, thanks so much. Have a great day.